What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Bonus Points Super Rugby Series brought to you by OsteoStrong LA, Whale Bird Kombucha, and Macro Butter. My name is TJ Olsen, and I'm back talking footy with my crew, Tavita Holofia, aka artist Novel Capote, and James Tesserero. And I just want to say one thing, boys. How about them Chiefs? Oh, man, I'm so happy. So happy that the Chiefs have now recorded two wins in a row. I never thought I'd have to say that because they've been struggling, but I'm ready to talk footy. How's the week been, boys? Hull, I'll let you go first. How you been, mate?
Good. Yeah, really good. I mean, after that Chiefs win, I was a lot better because I honestly thought last week was a fluke. maybe not. So I'm good. I'm good. Thanks, Buzz.
Yeah, James, I know it's a little early for you in the morning, but you rose up and you're here to chat footy with us. How are you, mate?
Mate, I'm good. I'm coffeed up, 7:30 in the morning. Nowhere I'd rather be.
Best way to start your Monday. Okay, well, let's get stuck right into it. We'll talk about the Highlanders and the Hurricanes matchup first. Arguably one of their most well-known players, Aaron Smith, has now become the most capped Highlander of all time, overpassing the incredible Ben Smith. So I just want to say congratulations, Nuggie, one of the best players to put on a Highlanders jersey. One of the key pieces to lead the Highlanders to a championship. It will be a long time before anyone comes close to receiving that honor, because a few of the boys are thinking that he might even crack 200 if he ends up staying for a couple more seasons. So I want to talk about him for a second. I want to just talk to you guys to pick your favorite Smith moment or Smith quality or anything you guys want to talk about. Hully, you can go first. What's your favorite Aaron Smith moment or quality?
He's just the quintessential pest of a halfback. You know, and as funny as it is, halfbacks, you know, those supreme ones, you think of George Gregan, Justin Marshall, Aaron Smith, and he's just got that legendary quality. He when he wants to, he can change the dynamics of a game just like that by just being a little pest, getting in someone's ear, or getting in his own players' ears, because we've all seen him get angry at his own players, asking them what the heck they're doing. So I think that's as a nine, arguably you could say one of the greatest, if not the greatest nine in the modern era. I think that's, you know, his leadership quality and being able to be that influential to change games on both his side and the opposition, I think that's an invaluable quality of Aaron Smith.
James, what about you? Is there a favorite moment or a favorite, I guess, quality about Aaron Smith that you value of him?
Most of his good moments have been miserable moments for me as a Wallabies fan. So, I agree with everything Tavita said in terms of like a combination of pestiness and leadership. That's what every good halfback is. He's also very much a blend of styles. You sometimes have like smaller, quicker, nippier halfbacks, and then you have contrasting the bigger, more physical halfbacks. And he's kind of a decent size and physicality and quickness and has sweet service. So he's kind of like the best qualities you look for out of different halfbacks blended into one pretty amazing package with all the intangible stuff like being a nuisance to the opposition, influencing the referee, inspiring his teammate. So, mate, it's hard to compare era to era, but there haven't been many better nines.
Yeah. I think the one question I do want to ask is I want to put you guys on the spot a little bit is just a, it's not really a debate. It's, I just want to see a personal opinion between him and DuPont from France. It was, if you guys had to pick a halfback, who would you guys pick? Would you pick Smith or would you pick DuPont? Because DuPont is becoming arguably the most popular halfback in all of rugby at the moment.
I think he's the most in form. Aaron Smith has had pretty up and down seasons last year. This year has been pretty on, but I think on form, yeah, you know, I'd go DuPont. But if I was choosing have to win a game, this is it, I'm going Aaron Smith every day of the week. I'm putting my money on him.
I think, James, what about you?
Mate, there hasn't been much crossover in terms of, like, with the virus, the Northern Hemisphere has stayed in the Northern Hemisphere and the South has stayed in the South. So DuPont's kind of rise has happened over the last 2 or 3 years, and a lot of that has been COVID affected. So I look forward to seeing him come down to Australia with the French side in July, I believe, and I'll be able to make a little bit better assessment after that. But certainly everyone in the Northern Hemisphere who watches him regularly, thinks he's the best halfback in the world at the moment.
That's he does all have I've the fastest hearing, pass. Holy moly, his pass is disgusting.
Yeah, when I do see his pass, it is a rocket ship coming right at you. I hope he has a good rapport with some of his teammates and they're prepared for that. But it'd be an interesting. Yeah, it'd be definitely something that I would love from my halfback. But okay, let's talk about the gameplay. So the matchup for me, it was an amazing display of set piece execution. So brilliance by both teams. The Hurricanes' first try was a good example of that. It was just simple set piece execution. The Highlanders' first one was a try that showcased a lot of technicality. Why they're really deadly in the lineouts. You saw that they would receive it from their back pod and they would pop it to their front pod while they're mid lineout move. So it's something that not many lineouts do, but something that turned out really well for them. I think they have a lot of variety when it comes to their lineouts. But both of the teams are very deadly. But when it comes to the Hurricanes' phase play, I think that was the kicker that set them apart. So with that in mind, we've got a new segment this week to provide a little bit of one-on-one in-depth breakdown of some gameplay, and that's called Coach's Corner. So, James, being you're the coach for this one, we feel like we know a thing or two about the game of rugby, and I'm going to pass it over to you, and as you've been one of my coaching mentors, and just to break it down. So, what have you got for us today?
So the forward pod set kind of it's a very very common pod of three where you have like a lead forward out front with the inside and outside options. That kind of pod of three is something we see in almost every professional and senior match at the moment, even at Clubland. Typically, they pass to the front of that pod of three, and then that front man either tips the ball or does a shotgun pass in behind to a playmaker who's looping the same way. So the 10, I forget his name, was looping in behind that pod of three, and instead of that shotgun pass out the back going the same way, the lead forward did a reverse pass and the playmaker swept back the opposite way. And why that's effective is because the ruck defense, the 10-20-30, sees this look 20 times a game and it always goes the same way with that behind pass. Yep. So that forces the 10-20-30 to basically quit on the play, because they think they know where it's going and it's going wide and they can take a bit of a rest. So the inside defense kind of quit on that play because they assumed it was going the same way. That switch pass and then an inside ball to Bodie Barrett caught some of their defenders having cheated and quit on the play and flat-footed. And so he was able to run that kind of inside line off the switch play and caught some defenders napping. Very well done. Yes. Led to a very, very well constructed try.
It's something you are right. Is even at the professional game, you'll see a lot of defenders. They'll just kind of go in the motion, and I'll see if I can share my screen on this one. And they'll just basically just keep pushing the same direction, just hoping that it'll come off in the same way, and just keep pushing into that space. And then having someone who's able to go in that direction. I'll see if I can press a replay now. So we've got the pod coming in here, just like James spoke about. Instead of having that going the same direction from where the ball passed over here, they've basically switched it back, passed through, bam, try time. Yep. So that's something that I don't usually see that is really utilized a lot. And I personally, as soon as I saw that, I've gone, I'm going to steal that so much. Like, I want to incorporate that into my set pick. Hala, is there anything that you wanted to add to that, or any other element that you saw regarding that phase play?
No, I think it was just beautiful rugby, to be honest with you. Here's the thing, though. The precision needs to be on. All it takes is one wrong pass, one runner too late, one runner too early, and that play doesn't happen. So it just goes to show the precision and the skill level of everyone involved. It was a great game. I loved that game. That was beautiful.
So with that one, I think you make an excellent point, is especially with counterattack, you got guys like Will Jordan, you've got guys like Caleb Clark. If they can pick up that pass and they're just away, it's something where you are right. If it's one misstep, that's a try for the other team, especially if they're even on their own goal line. But thank you for the insight, James. Brilliant as always. I love
that. What a coach. What a coach. Look at him.
What a coach.
There's a job up for grabs in New South Wales. You need to put your resume in, my G.
I do want to stay on the subject of Jordy Barrett, though, and pose you guys a question, because he was the one that scored all of the Hurricanes' 30 points. That was crazy. We just saw Richie Mwanga break his scoring record for a game, and then Jordy Barrett comes in and he's like, okay, hold my beer, bro. I've got one for you. But if the Hurricanes were missing Jordy Barrett for the week and had another fullback for this game, do they get the W? So, James, I'll come to you first. Do you think they do?
Mate, a couple of those tries, did he score three?
I think he might have scored two or three tries, and the rest of them were like kicking for points.
So that line that try we just analysed, I think he ran a very good line, but I reckon probably that's well constructed, and another fullback probably scores the same one. Mm-hmm. I think another try, he was just off somebody's hip and fell over the line. So a couple of those tries were created by the people inside him and may have been scored by another fullback. The goal kicking is hard. Under pressure is kind of hard to replace.
Mm-hmm. So maybe agree.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I don't think Jordy Barrett's the greatest runner in the world, but he's definitely the greatest IQ to hit those lines at the right time at the right place. You know, his rugby IQ is through the roof. So, you know, what he lacks in, you know, that invaluable X factor. And by that, I mean, you know, something like a Caleb Clark who can just literally do something. He makes up because his rugby IQ is through the freaking roof. And he just knows, he knows when to pass, when to kick, and when to run. And that's insatiable. But I agree with James. I think his tries came off just doing your job. And at that level, especially in any Kiwi team, they all know how to do their job. So, you know, I think for the weekend, yes, they can. But kicking and what James said, that's like, he's ice cold, dude.
Yeah. Some of those kicks that I've seen him doing in a couple of previous games in the week, so I'm like, how do you even pull that?
Well,
that's
if you watch his goal kicking, right, he changes whether the ball goes out and in, straight or comes in and then goes. I'm like, you little freak. You're a talented man.
he's definitely a talented one. But all right, so let's stay on the New Zealand channel and let's move on and talk about my favorite game of the week, the Chiefs versus the Blues. Got my jersey on. Ready on. The Chiefs have now come away with two wins in a row against the Hurricanes, and now this week against the Blues. Although I'm very happy about this, I'm still very critical. You know me. I'm never happy. I'm always looking to fix it. But because this, I believe the Chiefs could have won by a lot more. Their execution rate was just horrible. After last night's game, the Chiefs are now number one in the comp in defenders beaten. They're number two in clean breaks. They're number two in meters carried. And I hate to single out one player because if it was a team effort, there was a lot of mistakes on that field. But the one of the main problems is Quinn Tupaia. I can't just turn around and say he had an amazing game. I have to single him out because he made some amazing clean breaks. I can't take that away from him. But although he's very handy at bending or breaking the line, every time he got an opportunity to get it off or go like support play, take it into contact, he just panicked and he just threw it away and it turned into like three or four turnovers. So, Hala, I'm going to come to you with this one because I know you can tell me if I'm 100% wrong. We saw Sean Wainui. He had his 50th game on the weekend, and he can play center quite well. Mm-hmm. Is Sean Wainui a more effective center pairing for Anton Lennett-Brown than Quinn Tupaia, or should I have more faith in Quinn at this position?
Look, the big difference there is Sean Wainui has just got caps under his belt. You know, he's... Mm-hmm. And he's worked, he's been, he's played with the best of the best. So, you know, he's sort of like your perfect outside back where you could just slot him in, slot him out, you know, whether, you know, at outside or on the wing, and he does his job really well. I personally think he's a better winger. That's just me personally. But I think him and Anton Lennett-Brown are that's their strongest center pairing that they can have. And I think it makes the defense just falter that little bit because you don't know whether they're going to crash or if they're running lines or if it's a one-on-one scenario. Those two especially tend to break that first line or at least be able to suck in two defenders for a quick ball retention. And that's why I think the Chiefs are we'll stick with that. But I think personally, he's a better winger. But for the like right now, yeah, look, I agree with you. And they need to keep Sean Wainwright in the centers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I keep seeing. I don't know if it's some favoritism or it's just like they feel he's going to be the next place, because I can't disagree. In Mitre 10 Cup, he's a phenomenal center. Like you can't take that away from him. But I think at this level, obviously he needs a little bit more experience, and I think Anton Leonard Brown provides that chat to him. He's able to tell him what to do. He's able to give him that guidance because obviously he's got experience. But yeah, I just think he just needs to when he gets into those moments, just go into his checklist and just panic less.
He just
and
needs just to look calm for the down. Option. That's what he needs to do. Just be cool, bro. Just be cool.
Just ice cold. But something I thought I'd never see on the weekend was the Blues struggle at scrum time. So we've spoken about it multiple times, saying their pack is basically an All Blacks pack. I mean, aside from Goodhue and Tolai at the hooker spot, they've got a full All Blacks pack. Plus, you have two All Blacks props coming off the bench. But the Chiefs were able to shut them down on a few occasions from their defensive scrum. So, James, I want to come to you. Is this more good Chiefs performance or poor execution by the Blues?
I'll probably add a option C. I think without being an expert at scrum by any stretch, it's very much matchup based. Mm-hmm. So the Blues can dominate three scrums in a row, like three weekends in a row against other opponents. Those opponents can then dominate the Chiefs scrum, and the Chiefs can somehow get the top of the Blues scrum, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it comes down to kind of matchups in the front row, size and shape, kind of certain different adjustments and techniques you can make to offset the other scrum's advantages. And I think kind of on form, you would have expected the Blues pack to win that battle based on how they've both fared against other Kiwi super teams. But the matchups and some of the adjustments went the way of the Chiefs, and that's like, again, it's not my area, but I can kind of appreciate that it's very much like personnel based, and certain front rows are awkward to scrum against. And I think that probably gave the Chiefs some advantage.
See, man, like if kids want to watch an informative show or listen to an informative show, we talked about it. We talked about inertia a couple of weeks ago. We've got a lot of technical talk that we can still explain. Man, you're on fire, James. I'm loving this. So
kids no pattern.
Yeah. 100%. No, I don't think we can all come on the show and say we're scrum experts, but no, I agree with that. There is definitely a lot of validity there. I don't know. Hala, have you got your PhD in your scrum? I agree with that. I think it is very personnel based. It's something where it's the Chiefs will come up, but I'm happy they beat the Blues, so I'm stoked about it. But we'll move on and we'll talk about Super Rugby AU and we'll talk about the Reds and the Waratahs, because a lot of news coming out of that camp that I found out literally a few minutes ago. So thanks for that update, boys. But all the stats were relatively even in this game that I found out. But however, the Waratahs' defensive pressure was quite poor. But the Reds' execution on attack was obviously much better, with the end being 7-1. And an interesting point that Hala made to me yesterday is that Alex Murphy is now the leading try scorer in Super Rugby as a hooker with 6 tries. That's like, it's not unheard of for a hooker to be leading the try scorer, but that's awesome. That's something Hala told me.
Oh, sorry.
No, you go.
I'm just going to say, this is what Australia needed, is a hooker like him. A hooker that plays like a Kiwi hooker. That is what is missing in Australian rugby, and you got it. His name's Alex Murphy for president.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, let's stay on that. So with the impressive gameplay that the Reds put in, do you think it was more their scrum set piece or their line-out set piece that was more impressive?
I think it was both. I think, honestly, their set pieces were rubbish for a very long time. They've done the work, and I thought losing Isaac Rodder was going to hurt them, and it really hasn't. If anything, it's probably improved the quality of jumpers and how many they've got options now and options into the bench. for your lineouts, which is beautiful. And I think the scrummaging has got better. I've been pretty critical of Nella Tupou. His scrummaging has been very up and down, and I think he's really come into his own now. And he's just being quite a very forceful prop, which is something that I think he lacked for a little while. For as big as he is, he wasn't really dominating those scrums. So I think it's beautiful. I think all around the board they're very competitive, and I think just collectively they've come together really well. I don't think one's stronger than the other. I think they just work beautifully at the moment.
One thing I was pretty surprised about was that first Tate McDermott try, about how he was able to get through like four or five defenders just with like one little jink and go. But James, I know you're disappointed in this loss, and I know Rob Penny is a coach. He probably would have been too, but he's now gone, which I've just found out. So, but week in, week out, he wouldn't have been trying to do the same thing over and over again. I think he was genuinely trying to get this young team ready for difficult battles each week. One thing he did this week was have the Wallabies psychologist in their camp. And obviously that isn't going to be an overnight fix, but I think the defense was still poor. Their execution on the attacking end was poor. And with Rob Penny gone, this poses a question. Is there justification in Penny getting fired, or was he put into a terrible situation? So, James, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on this?
Mate, I think he was put in a pretty terrible situation. We're kind of – I'm not sure that's the right word, but I think expectations have to be managed when you're coming in to coach a team that is so young and has lost like such a drain of talent. So you can kind of look at, if you were to say before the season he's going to start 0-5, you'd say he's probably going to be under a fair bit of pressure. But they haven't really been competitive in most of those matches.
No.
And they're not really getting better over those five losses.
No.
So with such a young, inexperienced group, you kind of need to really be measured about what you expect. But you expect them to play hard. You expect to see improvement. You expect to see kind of character in the group kind of like pulling together. And obviously, like, the product on the field is slop at the moment. But he does, as a kind of, I can also sympathize as a coach, if you're kind of at a disadvantage with talent every single week, the world's best coach isn't going to get great results.
Right.
Yeah.
I think they're severely lacking leadership since Hooper's gone too.
Yeah.
And that comes, like, you know, without being too, too aggressive, in my opinion, I just think you watch them and you can see that their heads are down. Like, just everything is just, like, it's not right. You know, because they scored first points and you could see, you know, cool. Then all of a sudden the points just start piling up and the body shapes change, the heads are down, and there's just no one on that field that's stepping up and saying, come on, boys, like, you know, let's still do the 80-minute performance. And that is a very worrying factor for any team, let alone the Waratahs.
We spoke about it, is age really comes in a factor, is when you have, obviously a lot of these guys have played high caliber rugby at very young ages, but you don't really have that experienced veteran or someone who's been in the Super Rugby system for a while who could step into that position. I think a lot of them you could maybe look to Jack Maddox, who has had Wallaby caps and has been in the Super Rugby system for a while, or someone can step up, but is it his duty, or is it something that he feels comfortable doing because some other teammates can look to their left and go, you're basically on the same level as me, and some people can get a little butthurt about it, or that could make the culture even worse. So there's so many different variables that go into it. But yeah, I think age plays a big factor into it. But yeah, where do the Waratahs go from now?
Well, mate, I think you see in most sports, sometimes when you move a coach on and get a new coach in, you sometimes see a little temporary bump, like in performance. So maybe we see that immediate bump this week. I'm not even sure who the Waratahs have coming up, but maybe Actually, it's Easter weekend. I think they've got the Brumbies. But you sometimes see that kind of temporary bump when you move a underperforming coach out and bring new coaches in.
Yeah, you are right. They have the Brumbies. Yep.
So that's probably another loss, if we're honest.
The tone—it's how you said it. Well, that's probably another loss.
See, this is what I love about James. Is even though it's the Waratahs, like he's honest, mate. Like there's nothing that he's going to turn around and go, "This is my team. I'm going to back them no matter what." No. He's just realistic.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll support them without betting on them. It's mate, they're about to be set piece to death by the Brumbies next week. Yep. It's
that's the best segue I can get.
I'll put $100 every time they have a line out on the Waratahs line, they score.
Yeah.
Man. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, good segue, because I want to talk about the Brumbies set piece, because I found it phenomenal on the weekend. The Western Force versus the Brumbies. Brumbies obviously the favorites in this one, as they're the reigning Super Rugby AU champions, but let's talk about the Western Force first, because I just want to get that out of the way. The Force have been having a rough go of it entering the Super Rugby AU competition. We've seen some positives from them, but they've had another rough game this weekend. One particular player, though, that I do want to single out, Jono Lance. So although it brings me no pleasure in talking about this, because I really do genuinely like him, I've liked him for a lot of years, he hasn't been having the best performances, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So James, in your opinion, do you feel the Force need to go on the hunt and find another 10 to replace Jono Lance, or do they need to move and shuffle some things around, or is he still the guy that can lead this type of team?
I wouldn't have him as a starting 10. Jake McIntyre has been doing quite a good job. He's a little bit younger. He's got a couple of good years in France behind him now, and he's come back and looks kind of more poised and more ready to be a starting fly half at Super Rugby. He got bent up by Tupu last week, and then he went down with a hamstring injury in this week's match. And I think if the Force can keep him healthy, I think he's a starting caliber 10 in the Super Rugby, and potentially, who knows, maybe kind of goes on to kind of push for Wallaby selection. But I don't think Jono Lance is a starting Super Rugby fly half, but mate, he does a job off the bench, and you'd probably have him as backup and security somewhere in your 23, and you can play a few positions.
Yep. Hala, I can see your face. What are your thoughts on this?
Look, I think if they could choose anyone else that they would right now. I think, look, Jono Lance, he's served rugby great, but I think time's up. His experience in the team is good, in that he definitely – you know, he is that leader when he's on the field. I think he does really well in a leadership role. But I honestly just think physically he just doesn't cut it anymore. He has the rugby IQ, so he's making these decisions under pressure because he is fatigued, because sometimes I think he overplays his hand a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think Jake McIntyre's the man. I liked him when he was at the Reds. I thought he was a really solid fly half. So I'd like to see him starting for sure, and then bring Jono Lance on off the bench to play literally any job in that back line.
Yeah. Well, let's switch it over. We'll talk about the Brumbies. They had an amazing performance, especially with their phase play and their set piece. They had a very layered attack, which I've always liked the look of. They have threats all across the board, especially in the 22. They had 6 entries in the 22 and 4 of those coming off with tries. So, Hala, was this more poor Western Force, or was this more Brumbies attack brilliance?
No, Brumbies are clinical. Like we said, like I just said before, 5 out, line out, they're going to score every time. Like they're very, very good at that set piece. And when they enter, they're one of those very rare teams that when they enter that red zone, they know what play they're going to do before they enter that zone. They set it up like a beautiful chess move, and then they just execute. And if they don't get there on the first, second go, definitely on that third go. And they do it with just a cold heart, like a samurai sword, dude. They just do it, whoosh, slice, and they score. And that's just indicative of the great processes that they've got in, at the Brumbies, and just how good that these players are just to execute and deliver.
Yeah, I think you see the Len Ikitau try that they scored. It's not even the fact that they're so clinical on that one phase that they were able to find the right person in the right space. They were building for that like two phases before that. They were sucking in that defense. They were holding him right in that corner. And then I think it ended up being like a 5 or 6 on 2 or something like that. And it was just find the right guy.
Yeah. The one thing that the Brumbies do better than anyone else in at least the Super Rugby Australia is they know when to commit and not when to commit, and they know when they want fast ball or slow ball. If you watch the replay of that game in particular, there were some times when one was just shooting out because he knew he wasn't trying to take the advantage line. He was just trying to get sucky and get that quick ball out because they had a runner coming in from the blind. And they just do it beautiful. Like, I'm just like, dude, this is insane. They do it so, so well. And I thoroughly enjoy watching it. Unless they play the Reds, in which case they can lose.
Mate, I think he's frozen up.
He's frozen. Mate,
I'll keep the party going while TJ sorts it out. Working backwards from, you were talking about how clinical they are inside 40 metres. Every time they get a penalty, they kick for the corner. Banks is very good at banging that into more territory. And working backwards from that, you can see what that does to the opposition defense. And they start to leave the ruck alone because they don't want to concede a penalty. They start to take a half second off their line speed because they don't want to give away an offside. And so all of the attack inside 40 meters comes a little bit easier because the other team is pulling back for fear of being penalized. And then as soon as the other team gives away that penalty, you can just see heads drop and they know that they're about to defend a maul and they're probably going to concede a try. So, mate, I think kind of that clinical set-piece stuff impacts the game in all sorts of other ways and makes their attack a heap easier.
Yeah, definitely. I think also too – oh, there he is. He's back.
Apologies, guys. Lost Wi-Fi connection.
Yeah, I think too, James, that's exactly right. And that's what I like is that they're just so poised outside of that red zone that when they do get in there, you actually notice I'm loving the combination of Ikitau and Simone. Because you can see outside of that red zone, they're sort of, you can see they're sort of, are we ball playing? Are we crack? As soon as they get to that red zone, it just lifts again. That whole backline becomes a little bit faster. Lolo Sio's distributing the ball, like, just boom, 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 boom. And you can just see, like you said, because the defense have now relaxed, they're just taking that space so fast. And then the opposition is just like,
All right. Well, technical difficulties didn't stop me from talking about this bonus point segment, but it's called the bonus point for a reason. We're going to stick with the Aussie thing. Team and talk about the Wallabies squad that was just selected over the weekend. So lots of great names in there, and I want to talk to you guys about who you like, who you don't like, who you feel should have been in there. And with a positive note, and like one was Caden Neville. I think the depth at the lock position, I really like that selection. I think he's going to be really beneficial. Pony Faumasili, just because I want to see that monster unleashed in international test match rugby. I just want to see him wreck people.
Can you imagine him like a Wallabies versus South Africa game? That would be a beautiful sight to see him with his mullet.
I would honestly love to see that because it would just be too, or even just like Argentina, like putting up him up in like a guys. Oh man. But my third guy, he's got to be Andy Muirhead. So Andy, he's come a long way since playing at South Rugby Club in Brisbane. He's been playing so well in Super Rugby AU. He's now fourth in the comp and defenders beaten. He's eighth in clean breaks, seventh in meters carried, and he's just a great defender anywhere on the pitch. So what you want in that, I guess, middle-aged player. So he's not in that in the later ages of his career. He's still got plenty of years to go. He'll stick around for a long time. I think it's a good opportunity for him, and I hope he gets an opportunity coming test season. So, Hala, I'll come to you, and then James, I'll get in this Wallaby squad.
Sorry, man, you're cutting out there a little bit, but I'm pretty sure you asked me who I think was in a good asset in the squad and who maybe should have made it. Was that correct?
And I think specifically wing at Andy Muirhead at wing, and do you give him a cap?
Look, I think definitely with Andy Muirhead in there, here's the thing. We're not short of wingers, are we? And arguably, Marika Korobedi, he's on one. And then who you're putting on the other side is the crazy question. I think Andy Muirhead definitely deserves a shot. I'm not too sure. If I'm to be very honest, I don't know if he gets in, plays a game this year, but I think definitely being in that Wallaby squad and that top 40 squad is definitely going to help him at least for next year as well.
Yeah. I might just quickly speak on wingers as well. I think you said that Korobedi walks into the squad, and on form he certainly does. There's ongoing reports that he's already signed with the Japanese top league side.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I've been hearing that too.
On bait breaking news on the bonus point, but if that's the case, if he's doing like a one-year sabbatical, maybe you keep giving him Wallaby spots. If he's signed beyond the next World Cup, maybe you don't select him and you give Muirhead one wing spot and Vunivalu the other, and you start building around people who are going to be available for the next World Cup.
Yeah.
I thought that wing was wing selection is probably going to be one of the biggest ones. And I think the test matches are in July, so we'll probably know the status of Korobedi well before then. Yeah. And if he signed in Japan, I don't think
that's fair. I hope he stays, or at least it's just a sabbatical. Because
I think I'm the same. I hope it's going to be a sabbatical, but I don't think it's going to be. I think he's getting a lot of money thrown at him at the moment because he's like in previous years he's had like a lot of French clubs chasing him. He's had a lot of Japanese clubs chasing him. Like, this has been a long time coming, and he's tried to get out of ARU contract before, and they wouldn't let him go. So I feel that this may be something that he's going to go for a while
cheese,
now.
Bro. Get your cheese, my man.
Over a million per year, apparently.
Yeah, I've got nothing against the guy making money. God. Like seriously, it's good on him. Get his money, but yeah, I agree with you. If it is a sabbatical, I reckon still keep him in the mix. But if he's signed for any longer, got to get some of these young guys in to get them at least some caps, because this is the time. And this is actually a conversation I wanted to talk a little bit about as well, because Reece Hodge, he's a guy who. I'm not necessarily Wallaby in general. I'm still a fan of him, but for this particular time as a Wallaby in this camp, I feel that on form, I don't really feel he should get that spot. I know he has the long boot. He can kick those 60-meter penalties, and he's a very handy player, but I'm really liking the look of Matt Hansen, to be honest. He's currently leading Super Rugby in a couple of stats, including clean breaks, and he's a young player that I'd love to see get a Wallaby cap. And I think if you're going to do it, you probably should do it now just to get him in the mix so he doesn't go off and get an international contract. I feel if you need experience at that fullback position, you have a guy like Tom Banks, who I feel has been playing better than Hodge this season. If you want to get some young players in the Wallaby system, get them those caps, you got to do it now as it's 2 years away from the World Cup to keep them here. So I want to hear from you guys. Do you guys agree with that selection, or do you guys have players that you think are in the same spot?
Reece Hodge isn't in that team because he's a great player. He's in there because he can kick a ball long. I think if Matt Tomoa stays in that squad and then eventually the 23, can't see Reece Hodge being in that 23 at all. Between Lolasio and Matt Tomoa, I think they're very good goal kickers. And I just think that Reece Hodge is really lacking a lot at the moment. And I agree with you. I mean, it's a three-test series against France, in the middle of the year. You bleed them in, it's going to help in the long run. And I can't see Reece Hodge making a World Cup squad. in 2 years.
Or as James says, just get him in, warehouse him, keep him there. Just, yeah. No, yeah, James,
yeah, man. Off form, yeah, I wouldn't have him in the team.
James, I want to hear from you. Are there any players that you would want in the squad, or do you disagree with that notion?
Well, I think we're picking for the future. I think it's kind of also important that we win this series against France. So, kind of,
which is rugby, not a given.
No, not at all. France, I think they're second in the world. Is that right?
Really?
Second or third or fourth. I don't know. Anyway, they're significantly higher than us, and one of the form teams of the Northern Hemisphere. And I think for the health of Australian rugby, knocking off one of the top European teams in a home series will be kind of very, very important. So you pick for the future, but you also pick to win this test series. So I don't think you have any kind of real experimentation. And I think the Wallabies generally do a good job of like getting up and coming future guys around the camp and getting them on the fringes of the Wallaby side, just to kind of build their experience and make the transition easier. So a bunch of these selections of some of these younger guys, I think, is about kind of that transition into international rugby, rather than having them in the 23 against France.
Right. And Dave Rennie has come out and said that this isn't the squad. This is just the training camp team for the time being. And it's also to kick some masters who haven't, namely Brendan Amosa, who are playing Amosa, who's just been completely overlooked in favour of the in-form hookers right now, and Alex Murphy and Philippe Gaitu. So, you know, he hasn't ruled out that Isaac Rodder may not be called up and James Hooper may be called in. So, you know, it's interesting to see. And I like it. I think it's good because I think it'll be a very interesting team, the squad of 30 that we're going to see in the next, 2 months when it's named.
Yeah. So we'll finish off this conversation. Is the Wallabies that obviously have caps, who do you think are going to be the pivotal pieces in the Wallabies campaign? Like who do you think that we should have in that 110 spot or in that center pairing or who should be right in there?
Do you want to go first, mate?
Yeah. So look, I'm gonna throw a little wild card in here. I honestly think especially with how he's been playing at the moment, I think the combination of Fraser McWright and Sakai Loto is going to be a very interesting combination. Where do you keep them on the flanks, or does Sakai Loto now, because he's playing phenomenal when he's in that lock position.
Yeah, like if I was selecting Wallabies players for that lineup, I would probably put him in a lock position.
Right, and I like how him and Fraser McWright are playing, because when one needs to be the go-getter, the snaffler of doom, one is and the other one isn't. So just watching them play, they've got this, whereas you look at someone like Pete Samuel, who just, he's just an animal across the board. But, building off, because the problem that the Wallabies have had is that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, outside of Michael Hooper, they just sort of – there wasn't anything that really stood out, and they lacked in their scrums and lineouts, especially, against the All Blacks. So, for me, that's what I'm really excited to see who they're going to choose and how they're going to choose it.
Yeah.
You add Isaac Rodder in there as well, and, there's a who knows?
Yeah, because you guys were talking about last week about the Valentini selection, about how he's definitely an option for 8, and I don't disagree with that. It's obviously I do like Pete Samu in that 8 jersey, but Valentini can play. But I did check the rankings, James. It is France 3rd, so okay. you are correct.
Australia
but,
7th. Australian Wallabies 7. Seven.
That doesn't mean anything, because South Africa is still number one, and they haven't played a test match in a year.
Such a joke.
So we'll leave it there. But James, I'll get you to round us off. Who do you think is going to be one of the most important pieces for the Wallabies' success?
So I just keep an eye. What jumped out at me from that selection was there's no less than about four blindside flankers.
Yeah.
That's a spot where no one has really put their stamp on that jersey. Keep an eye on Lachie Swinton. You remember the last time, I think he's only made one Wallabies debut. He absolutely laid out All Blacks for 45 minutes, and then he got a tackle wrong and got red carded. That's right. So I'm not sure. Like that
that's the type of player they need.
Yeah, seriously.
You can't coach that kind of crazy and aggression.
Yeah.
But you also, as a coach, don't want your aggression to be expensive.
Right.
So I don't know if that's maybe like a red cross against his name or a big green tick against his name.
Yeah.
But then they rushed Sitaleti Tamani right back into the squad. The timing was kind of curious in terms of he signs, he wears a jersey and gets a Wallabies call up all in the space of about 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there was a promise on that, like luring, like Rugby Australia luring back into the country with the promise of a Wallabies squad. And Pete Samu also may feature at six. If you've got Harry Wilson or Valentini at eight.
Right.
Tim Anstey was a bolter at six. And Josh Kemeny was a bolter at six.
Yep.
So the two most surprising, Anstey from the Force, Kemeny from the Rebels, probably the two most surprising selections were both blindside flankers. And that's a big kind of grey area and big question mark over the side.
I've never felt so relieved to watch someone get a red card because I was so nervous during that game. I was seeing him just laying people out and I was like, man, we are going to be bruised and battered come the second half. And then I was going, oh, thank God. Okay. Yep. Awesome. But I agree with that. I think he definitely deserves a call in because when he comes to international status, that aggression is what they need. They just need to put the All Blacks on the back foot, and they can do that with France as well.
Yeah,
it's going to be good stuff. But, yeah, cool, boys. All right, well, thank you for joining us. I do apologize about the technical difficulties for all our listeners. Damn, Wi-Fi's playing up. I don't know what's going on there. But awesome, guys. Super excited to hopefully watch the Chiefs get three wins in a row. That's my optimism talking. We'll see. But yeah, anything we're looking forward to during the week, boys? Hala, let you go first.
Bro, man, you know what? This week, we've got a great selection of rugby. So I'm just looking forward to sitting down and just handling it. It's going to be a good Friday clash for me, Crusaders versus Highlanders. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that game a lot. And I also think the Blues may pull a big score out against the Hurricanes after their woeful display on the weekend.
They're going to get angry. I feel that. All right, James, round us off. What are you excited about?
I'm looking forward to you paying your Wi-Fi bill so you can be back on the
I think I need to switch carriers. I'm with AT&T and they're just ruining my life. It's just
the income terrible. Spectrum, bro.
Everyone keeps telling me that. Any games you're looking forward to, James?
Man, I'm looking forward to my Wicks boys having the weekend off after a couple of big wins. Easter weekend, get the bodies right, watch a heap of Super Rugby, and just relax and recharge.
Yeah, boy.
I don't have a Sydney club, but I think it's going to have to be Randwick now because it's
mighty green.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when we went into San Francisco and we were standing there listening to Michael Checker, and we just had the W up for Wicks, and then we had to Wicks fingers. So yeah, I think that'll be my Sydney club. Get the W for Wicks. Nah. Okay, boys, thank you very much for the great insight. Loving the Coach's Corner, loving the footy. We will be back next week. The Giltinis do kick off in about 3 hours. If anybody's interested in watching Major League Rugby on the Rugby Network, go ahead and download that app. But thank you everyone for listening. Have a good day.
Thanks, boys.
Talk to you next week.
Love you, boys. See you, mate.